It's no secret local stores are hurting right now, but in every crisis, there's opportunity. Here's how one Side Hustle Show listener helped a local store find new distribution channels and sell $500,000 worth of their product. What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because the best way to predict the future is to create it. I'm excited to welcome a longtime Side Hustle Show listener, Dustin Reekman, to the program today to share a really unique side hustle, and I think a timely one, helping local stores reach a wider audience by taking some of their inventory or some of their top products online. A couple years ago, Dustin turned his digital marketing skills that he learned in his side hustle, a long-running blog called EngagedMarriage.com, he turned those into a new consulting business, and one of his clients was a local butcher shop. And as you'll hear in this call, he loved the product, kind of a higher-end, clean ingredient meat stick, and felt there was opportunity to reach way more customers. Stick around in this one to hear how Dustin set up this win-win partnership, how they sold $500,000 worth of Fire Creek snacks in their first year, including distribution deals with dozens of local Walmarts, and the online and offline marketing strategies you can apply today. Notes and links for this one, along with the full text summary with all of Dustin's top tips from the call, are at sidehustlenation.com/firecreek, all one word. One thing that you'll hear in this episode, and really throughout the Side Hustle Show archives, is that an entrepreneur's education never really stops. And of course, Dustin and I are no different. That's why I want to invite you to check out our sponsor, Skillshare.com. Skillshare is home to more than 25,000 expert-taught online on-demand classes in marketing, freelancing, productivity, social media, and tons more. You're sure to find the exact material you need to level up your skills and business this year. Skillshare is the online learning community for creators like us. And right now, Side Hustle Show listeners can unlock 2 months of free unlimited access. Check it out at skillshare.com/sidehustleshow. That's skillshare.com/sidehustleshow to get started for free. I'll be back with my top takeaways from this chat with Dustin after the interview. Ready? Let's do it.
The big takeaway for me is, you know, is there a local business in your area that's got something special, something that you can get behind? And do you have some skills that maybe that local business lacks? So either helping them sell more locally, or like in my case, take a local product and be able to bring it online, which is ultimately what we were able to do with Fire Creek Snacks.
Yeah, I'm thinking of some of the stores and products that we like locally that we would love for them to be able to stay in business. And what would it take to bring that to a wider audience? What would that look like? Now I'm curious, what was the first step in doing that for you guys?
Yeah, so we went into a really simple agreement. So kind of at the end of 2018, basically I was at 5% of gross sales was my agreement. And we said, we'll do this until it doesn't make sense to do it anymore. We did that for several months. And then in February of 2019, so about 3 or 4 months later, as I'm sure we'll get into, things were really starting to roll. We kind of came out of the gates quickly, especially on the wholesale side. And I ended up buying into the company. So at that point, I was a 10% equity owner, and now I'm 15%, and I've got an option to go to 25%. It was a really great business marriage, I guess. Ryan had an awesome product. He already had everything ready for market. He had already had some sales. He's been doing wholesale his whole life. So he had a really solid wholesale background, whereas I had online marketing skills from all the different side hustles and all the stuff I've done over time. Ended up being very successful.
Okay, so he already had some local distribution. You come on and say, okay, I think we could sell this online. And you've set this up on a performance basis, at least on the outset. Like, I don't want you to take on any upfront extra costs. I will just take a percentage of sales. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yep, that was it. Real simple. You know, we had a one-page contract, if you will, mostly a handshake agreement. The idea was he wasn't making much with the sales anyhow, and I didn't need the money, but it was a cool side project. It's the type of thing that appeals to me. I always try to lead with a win for whoever's on the other side. And so in this case, it was worst case, you're not going to sell anymore and you don't pay me anything. Best case, we sell more and you keep 95% of it, and I'll just take 5. And I saw there was a huge upside. And I also was very open that I wanted it to be more a different relationship than that in the future. But let's start here. Keep it simple. No risk to you.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that appealing to business owners, local business owners who don't want to incur any extra costs. It's like, I field cold calls all day long. What are you trying to sell me? It's like, no. I'm trying to sell your product to more people. So I'm on firecreeksnacks.com. Is that the primary online distribution channel, or am I missing it?
Nope, that's it. If you click shop now from that website, that's actually a WordPress website for people who want to get a little geeky. The actual shop itself where you'll check out and purchase and all that is a Shopify store. So it's at shop.firecreeksnacks.com. But yep, that's it.
What did you end up doing to drive traffic over here?
We really looked at the market to say, who would this appeal to? And what I think most people, if I say snack stick or meat stick, most people are thinking like greasy Slim Jims that you get from a gas station.
Yeah, exactly. Like snap into a Slim Jim.
Exactly. But there's also this that I didn't know at the time, but quickly realized there's the other end of that spectrum. There is an entire market of like uber clean snack sticks that are Whole30 certified. It's all grass-fed beef, also gluten-free. My personal taste, I'm not putting them down, but they taste like garbage to me. Like the texture is real gross and mealy, and it's like I don't like either of those spectrums. So what just instantly appealed to me about Fire Creek Snacks when I had tried one was like, this tastes awesome. And then I can look at it and be like, it also is like really clean. Like it's not Whole30 grass-fed beef clean because it's got beef, it's got pork. But I felt like it was like the perfect balance. We knew that that was unique. And so our messaging was always kind of around that. Like it's clean ingredients and it's the best tasting snack in the world is kind of the bold claim that we make. Then the complication becomes niche-wise, like our biggest marketing challenge, honestly, is that it can appeal to anyone. Kids like it, moms like it. The same contractor guy who might have eaten a Slim Jim might prefer this based on taste, but there's also like a keto guy at the CrossFit gym who would eat this because it tastes a lot better than maybe the Whole30 type of thing that he's having now. Practically speaking, what we did was we said, who can we speak to most directly to get some online orders quickly to start building an audience and just see who the customer is? And so the few months that I had worked with Ryan on his retail meat shops, we created an email list. So he had a great customer base. He had a loyalty program, pretty good web traffic just from being there over the years, and did a lot of bundles of the month and things like that that got people to check out the website. So when I created a new website for him for that, we made an email opt-in, which he had never had. And so by the time we really kicked things off early 2019, we had several thousand people on his meat company email list. So the very first thing we did was send them an email and say, hey, great news. You guys might be familiar with Fire Creek. We just rebranded it, et cetera. Gave them a great discount. And we pulled a lot of those people over to become Fire Creek online customers. That was really our first foray into online sales.
Okay. Did you do anything in the stores to incentivize or collect emails?
Not directly for Fire Creek. So in the stores, he had a part of what we did was create a loyalty program for his butcher shop customers. It's where they got, you know, money back after they spent so much. And that was all email based. So we were able to take those emails and then market to them. We never just took them and marketed as Fire Creek. We would take them and market as his meat company and say, you may be familiar that I created this, you know, in the back of our retail shops. He literally had his own smokehouse that he created all this and say, we're now online. We would appreciate your support. And so we pulled out the people who were just the people that were interested, and they became our first couple, several hundred customers.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And that's an advantage that an established brick and mortar has. Hopefully you've been collecting emails over the years from customers. And if you haven't, this kind of loyalty type of program is a good way to do that. So I like that. What came next?
Yeah, so after that, we had a small customer list. It was big enough, though, that we could start looking at some Facebook lookalike audiences. So basically, we took that kind of in the holiday season, 2018, 2019, and just started running some Facebook ads. I did it initially myself. It was pretty successful. We ultimately jumped into an agency, and that was actually one of our early mistakes, is they went way too fast, and we spent way too much money just trying to support their big agency fees, and they tried to spend a ton. And we were kind of breaking even if you just looked at the ad spend versus what we were selling. But when you looked at our cost of goods sold, and especially their fees on top of it, it was sucking our cash flow dry. And so we were only able to do that for about 3 months, and we had to pull the plug on all the Facebook spending because of the high costs. But the other thing we were balancing here is what I call like the wholesale bus was like charging at us. And then we can talk about that. But it's about the time that we tried to start getting a little bigger online. we started having all this activity and interest on the wholesale side of the business. And there's only two of us. There's still only two of us. It's Ryan and I. We have one contractor now who helps with some things. We just didn't have the bandwidth to be able to focus on online and focus on wholesale.
Let's go back to the Facebook ads thing. Were you guys comfortable breaking even before cost of goods in the name of acquiring a customer and saying, well, if they bought from us once, maybe hopefully they'll buy from us down the road again? Or is like, I want to make money from the very first order?
No, I mean, my philosophy is if you can break even after cost of goods sold, so basically I spend however much it takes, you order, and after we pay for shipping and the cost of the goods, we're breaking even on your first order. I mean, that's the dream. That's very difficult to do, especially physical products.
Yeah. If you acquire a customer for free, that's fantastic.
Right. But yeah, our benchmark was if we could just break even, not worried about cost of goods sold, we felt like the lifetime value would be worth it. The problem was the agency fees. I mean, we're talking several thousand dollars a month that was not getting, the return just was not there because of their fees.
So you turn to the wholesale route.
Yeah. So for the listeners, if you're not really familiar, there's what we call retail, or we'll call it direct to consumer. So that's basically selling to you on our website. Could be selling through Amazon, but basically it's direct, you buying directly from us. Wholesale means I sell it to a brick and mortar, and then the brick and mortar sells it to you. So again, Ryan's a brick and mortar guy. His whole business has been wholesaling. He buys meat, they process the meat, and they sell it for more than they bought it for. He always kind of leans that way. And again, that's good that we balance each other out. But right around the time I'm like, hey, this online thing's working. We're getting sales. We're seeing that the Facebook thing is not working so well. Well, he's like, we should try a trade show. I was like, well, what's a trade show? Like, I'd never been to a trade show in my life. So we decide we're going to do it and we're going to go big. So we go January 2019, we sign up and we go down to the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando, Florida. So PGA, you know, golf. So basically it's this massive show where all things golf are sold to golf courses and related companies. And so we went really big. Like, him and I flew down, we brought two of his friends to work because we had no idea, like, how busy is this going to be? No idea. We flew like 10,000 samples down for our booth. And we're like a 10 by 10 little booth. In hindsight, really fun. And it was crazy. But we hired like a couple models that were local. And like, they were in the main aisle pushing people down our aisle. So all our neighbors in our aisle loved us. Like, they had so much foot traffic. But it was super expensive. Like, the booth was like $13,000 or $14,000 to be there for 3 or 4 days. Travel for four people, all these samples. So we spent a lot. But I think in hindsight, we consider it like a really big success. At that show, we sold into over 120 golf courses. We finished, like, you don't really know, but we kept hearing that we were second or third for the best new product of the entire show. Like, we had so much attention. It really was like a baptism by fire for wholesale. For someone who had never been to a trade show, didn't know anything about wholesale, and we were just, as fast as we could hand out samples, people were taking them, and, oh, I want to order, and we had no system set up, so I'm taking orders on like Excel sheets, and we had square readers, and we're like, we'll give you a 10% discount if you pay now. We're just swiping credit cards. So it was fun, but it was crazy, and we learned a lot from it. But yeah, that was kind of our first wholesale thing. We ended up going in 2019 to 12 different trade shows, got into over 600 retail stores. So as you can imagine, there's just two of us. We both have families. We both have little kids. All the travel is taxing. It's very expensive. So it was great and horrible, I guess, at the same time. So 2019, you know, we were doing online stuff. I was still sending emails, and I would consider it a success, but it's like 80% of our attention was focused on wholesale, which was not at all what I signed up for or what my intent was, but it was good.
Does that end up being easier logistically to say, okay, I'm going to handle these wholesale accounts versus shipping off onesie-twosie orders to direct-to-consumer customers?
It can be, yeah. I mean, if we want to talk a little bit about logistics, the big downside of wholesale are the margins, right? Because you're selling it to someone who needs to then sell it to someone else for a profit. Whereas if I sell direct to Nick and his family, I can charge you the ultimate price and there's no middleman. The great thing about wholesale is the volume, because I'm typically, you know, I might be sending out $5,000 worth of product instead of $50 worth of product. So there's less handling of all that. So it's just a balance. And our goal with our business is to be 50-50 because we like that diversity. We definitely want wholesale distribution, but we definitely want good direct-to-consumer because, you know, coronavirus is a perfect example, but that diversity is super important.
Yeah. I want to highlight the wholesale thing in the trade show strategy for a second because I think this is really interesting for a consumer brand that has a really broad appeal. It makes it really difficult to segment an audience on Facebook, Instagram, and do that profitably. Even like Google search, I imagine, is it runs into its own challenges. But here's a way through these trade shows to get in front of your customer's customer in some ways, like these getting sold into 120 different golf courses. Like, yeah, this is a snack that would appeal to golfers. But had you tried to create a dedicated landing page or segmentation somehow, like that would have been, and meanwhile, turn off everybody else. Yeah, like, oh, this is the meat stick only for golfers. Like, that seems weird. But the wholesale channel gave you a way to do that. And I think that's a really interesting way of going where the cash is already flowing in the form of these trade shows, because it's a way to get the consumer product in front of consumers in kind of an indirect way. I am curious about wholesale pricing. So are you a traditional wholesale or retail markup would be half. So is that similar in this food space?
Roughly what you want is a 50% margin. And a 50% margin, I think about it better as like a 2x markup. So if it costs me 50 cents to make something and you're a wholesaler, I want to sell it to you for a dollar. So I double my money. And then you want to be able to sell it for close to $2. Now, 30% margins are very good in some categories. Some categories will only do business at 80% margins. You know, so it depends on the category. But we're like, yeah, 50% margin is kind of where we aim to be. We're in a commodities market. So one of our challenges is the cost of goods sold can actually change, right? We're selling beef and pork. And at the time that we're recording this, we're in the middle of the shutdowns and all that stuff from coronavirus. There's a lot of volatility in the meat market. So like our most recent inventory was like 20-25% higher than our previous one. And there's nothing we can do about it. It's just the availability of our product.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful to think of that 50 cents to a dollar to $2 to the end customer as kind of the stacking of the different pricing there. Are the co-packers, are they the ones shipping the stuff out to these wholesale accounts, or is now it's coming back into your hands and somebody on your team is doing that distribution piece?
Typically, it's come into our hands. So we're fortunate we have a warehouse at Ryan's main meat shop where they do a lot of their meat processing and production. We've got a space in there. So all of our direct consumer we do out of there. Ultimately, we can ship it to a fulfillment center and they can handle that, but it's pretty expensive. So we're kind of keeping it in-house. We have someone helping us with that. If we get to the point where we're with a very large national chain who's taking pallets of product, then for sure it would go straight from the co-packer to that end user. We have some pallet orders, but most of our stuff is like more FedEx size right now. So most of it comes to us and we have to basically pack and ship it as needed.
Okay. Are you like stuffing packages yourself or somebody in the warehouse, somebody on your team is doing that?
I have been this week because so it varies. A lot of times Ryan will kind of do it at the end of the day if it's just some online orders. But yeah, we have someone helping us for the most part, and that person's more and more becoming a full-time warehouse person. We'll talk a little bit about our Walmart story here, I think, in a minute, but he's mostly helping us manage what we're doing with Walmart, and then his other time is spent in the warehouse packing orders. Right now, he's busy with all the changes at Walmart, and Ryan's extremely busy just trying to keep up with the demands of his local butcher shops because there's so much demand on the grocery side. So yeah, I've been spending some long days in the back room, isolated from everyone, just packing orders and getting them out. It's been different for us during this time.
I can only imagine. Well, now you got to tell me the Walmart story.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get to Walmart, just to kind of close out the trade show thing, because it's applicable to everything that we learned from that moving forward, is the experience of going to 12 trade shows and being in front of thousands of people, you cannot replace in the customer feedback side of it. So we learned so much about what people cared about. Like when you have someone come up and they say, does this have nitrates? I'm like, I don't know what nitrates are. Now it's on our package. It says no nitrates because we realized it was a big deal. Stuff like that. And the biggest thing, which carries over into our Walmart and all everything we do online now, is we learned that 90% of the time, if we can get someone who's walking by our booth to try a sample they will, at a minimum, say it's really good. And if it's a fit for their business as a retail business, they'll want to buy it. It's a very impulsive thing. And that's our biggest challenge. And everything we do at Fire Creek is customer education. Because when I said snack stick, you've had samples, but your first thought, I'm sure, was, ugh, you know, it's a Slim Jim. I don't eat that stuff. It's gross. It's artificial ingredients. So we have some people walking by the booth, they're like, ooh, meat, put it in my mouth. I'll just eat it because they don't care. But most people are much more selective about what they eat now. And so the PGA show, perfect example, a lot of the quote-unquote buyers there are middle-aged men, they're golf pros, they're food and beverage managers, kind of, you know, upper-end white-collar workers. But they'll come and they're kind of the traditional meat snack connoisseur. So they're not hesitant at all to try it. The interesting groups are the ones that walk by, and they may be a couple of wives or a wife and their kids because they come as a family. And you try to get them, hey, you try this. Oof, I don't eat that stuff, right? No, this is different. So we kind of came up with this little slapstick thing where it's like, hey, just try one little bite. I promise if you don't like it, you can punch Ryan. You know, like that. I would be telling it to this lady just to get her to laugh and break down that barrier. And then they let her try it, let the child try it, and their eyes light up. They're like, wow, what is this? This is what's in this. This is good. And it's like, well, now that you've tried it, you know, it tastes good. But the best part is it doesn't have gluten. It doesn't have soy or dairy or wheat or any of the allergens that your kids probably, you know, want to avoid. It has almost no sugar. It's got 7 grams of protein. Like, you start just listing off all the benefits. Well, now they're open to hearing the benefits. But if I led with saying this is a high protein, low carb, they'd be like, I'm not eating that. That's nasty. But once they try it and they realize this is different, that's our thing. It's just like, how do we get this into the hand of a consumer? Because once they try it, the objections go out the window because it kind of speaks for itself with its quality.
That's an important note about going to trade shows too, is like, if you just sit back in your booth, wait for people to come up to you, yeah, maybe a certain percentage will be like, meat, put it in my mouth. But a lot of people are just going to keep walking on by. Like, you've got to be proactive. You got to be out in the aisle like, hey, come try this. Hey, come check out what we got. It was the same thing when we were selling paint jobs at the Seattle Home Show. It's me up on top of a ladder, like waving the sign around, like trying to get people's attention. Like, hey, we're doing free house painting estimates. Come sign up here. And whereas, like, if we just sat back, like, people would have just walked on by. Like, they've kind of got the blinders on. Like, I don't want to make eye contact. Somebody's going to try to sell me something.
100%. And we never tried to sell. I mean, it was always like, all we want you to do is try it. And then they would be like, well, how much is it? And, you know, we'd get into a sales conversation. But you're right. And, you know, we have a big banner behind us, a very simple booth, but it just says Fire Creek Snacks. It's got our logo. It says the best snacks in the world. So we'll sometimes be like, it's the best snack in the world. It says it right there. Just try it. And yeah, I'm actually very much an introvert. So for me to spend 12 hours on a trade show floor kind of talking to people as they walk by is extremely exhausting. But it's super gratifying whenever you just see their mind change as soon as they try it. And we can talk about kind of how we're trying to have that same experience online, because that's a huge barrier for us. But first, yeah, to talk a little bit about Walmart. So we had a local Walmart manager who reached out to us just on a Facebook message. He's like, hey guys, just let you know, love your snacks. That was the end of it. Tried to reach out, he didn't really respond. And like I said earlier, I'm always trying to figure out, like, what's the win for that person? Like, of course, I'd love to be in his Walmart store, but why would he want me in there? And then I remembered one of my wife's friends from high school is a market manager for Walmart. So I'm like, I'm going to email her and just try to get some insight. It's like, is it even possible? How does anyone get into Walmart? And so she gave me some great insights. And she's like, yeah, if you have a store manager, like, they have buying power. They can buy local. They actually encourage it. They want every store to kind of be a store of the community.
Yeah. And I've seen that. Like, we have local wines. We got, like, apparel from local sports teams and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So we went. So I was able to go back to that store manager, or Ryan was, and say, hey, we know you have a store of the community initiative. We'd love to meet with you and just see how can we, you know, serve you by having Fire Creek in your store. He was very open to it. It was a lot of hard technological work, like electronic data interfaces, and we had to spend money to be able to enter our items into their system. Like, you can imagine, like, dealing with the biggest retailer in the world. But so after a couple months of effort and just perseverance and just like, we're going to make this happen, you know, we're going to do it. We got into a store and it was very successful. He gave us a great location, like an end cap in the front. From there, it was just a leverage thing. It was like, hey, we're in Belleville. hey, O'Fallon, you're kind of competition, you know, the store manager over here is doing great. We'd love to be in your store too and give you these sales.
This is like the next town over.
Yeah. And so we're what's considered a DSD or a direct store vendor. So we are not in a Walmart warehouse yet. So the pain part of this is like you see the Little Debbie's guys or the Frito-Lay guys in their Frito-Lay shirt, and you see them in there every other day, and they're stocking their own shelves and cleaning stuff up. Like we have that same experience with Fire Creek. So we have to go sell to every store manager. That store manager has to say, yes, I want you in the store and here's where you can go. Then we're responsible for servicing that product and making sure it looks good. We sell it to the back, basically to the back of the dock, and then we go and put it in there. So again, it was originally Ryan and I, like, I'll get these five stores, you get these five stores. And we were just servicing it as we could. We've hired someone now who's awesome, and he's going around doing a lot of that. We've got another distributor who's helping us in one of our more remote regions. But we grew last year from summer to the end of the year to 15 stores. And then Ryan made it like his mission while I was focused on online. He's like, I'm going to get in every Walmart in St. Louis, in the St. Louis, broader St. Louis region. And so in the first two months of 2020, we went from 15 to now we're in 55 Walmarts. So it's a lot to keep up with, but it is incredible the amount of volume that they drive. You know, one Walmart's like six or eight of one of our other retail locations.
Okay, interesting. And so it's almost like owning, it sounds like a vending machine where you got to be the one restocking it, or somebody on the Fire Creek's team has got to be kind of make this a part of their daily or every other daily route to come back and restock this stuff.
It is, yeah. It's, you know, it's more like every week or every other week, depending on the store that we need to get in there. But yeah, then when you're low, it's like we got to coordinate a delivery and make sure that it gets delivered. But it's been well worth it. I mean, one of our mantras is like, let them eat it and they'll buy it. Another one of our mantras is to like own St. Louis. So we sell, you know, all 50 states. We're in multiple countries through some of our retail relationships or wholesale relationships, I should say. But we kind of said, you know, there's so much opportunity just in St. Louis. We're kind of our hometown, and we can say that we're a local product and we're, you know, St. Louis made or Illinois made if we're on the Illinois side of our region. And so we're still doing that. You know, we've done radio advertising. We've done some stuff that's unique for what's mostly an online and wholesale distributed brand, so that if I'm around St. Louis and you see me holding a snack stick, you've at least heard of it. You may not have tried it yet, but you're comfortable and you've heard of it and you know it's a St. Louis product. And the Walmart strategy has been center of that. Like most people in the course of a couple months have been in a Walmart. So if you're in Walmart in St. Louis and they've seen you in more than one store, like they think you're a huge brand that's in all the Walmarts. Even though, you know, we're not yet, but that's our goal, is to get a region with Walmart and have them be a warehousing partner. We're not quite there yet. We're pushing those buttons. They're a little distracted with other opportunities or other concerns right now. So,
yeah. And you can imagine that the pitch to a local shop owner, or maybe a local shop owner is listening to this, to say, oh, I could have distribution online. I could have distribution on Amazon. I could have distribution in 55 area Walmarts. And all of a sudden, the gears start turning. It's like, maybe my local brick and mortar store is having a hard time right now, but there's lots of other ways to get in front of potential customers, as you guys have shown. Curious if there's anything else aside from, it sounds like a lot of boots on the ground effort to get people to try it, have the conversations with decision makers, anything else that's worked marketing-wise to sell more of the stuff?
Yeah, I definitely want to talk through a few tactics on the e-commerce or on the online side, because that's, despite all this effort and energy and learning I did with wholesaling last year, it's still not my thing. Like, I'm still much more into online. But one other kind of item that someone could consider if they're trying to get better distribution of a local item is fundraising. So we had our snack sticks and we asked the question again, like my kids go to a mix of public and private school. Ryan's kids do as well. We're like, you know, they're always doing these fundraisers. They're selling candy bars or popcorn. And it's like, why couldn't they sell Fire Creek? And so we approached the Jerseyville, the home base, you know, the local private school there, with that idea. And we led with the win, like, hey, we'll sell these to you for $1. You can sell them for $2. It's a great, it's pretty much what people are paying in the store. There's no risk to you. Like if you buy a bunch of them and you don't sell them, we'll just buy them back. So no risk to you as an organization. It's something different. You're getting better margins than you do with the chocolate bars, and it's hometown, right? And so that last year was a huge success. We ended up doing three of those with local schools. They made a lot of money. For us, really easy money in the sense that there's no shipping. It's just, and we're getting our full wholesale price. It was great. And now our product's in the hands of like all these local families. So we're kind of doing our let's own St. Louis strategy at the same time. So we were really excited about the spring for fundraising this year. And then all our schools are shut down at the moment. So that's not happening, but maybe in the fall. So fundraising has been kind of another wild card that we hadn't even thought about.
I like that one. That's a creative way to go.
Yeah. So if it's all right with you, you can talk a little bit about kind of some of our e-commerce wins and some of the things that I think Side Hustle listeners could practically take some action with whatever they're trying to sell online.
Absolutely. Let's hear it.
All right. So I've made some notes here. So like it was such a blur going from the end of 2018 and then doing some e-commerce stuff while we were traveling and doing all the wholesale things. But we had some really impressive early wins. So one of them was, you know, I do some coaching and consulting. So I had a guy who has an online business and it's all about barbecue. And it's like what I would call a shoulder industry. Like he's not a competitor, but he's also got some of the same customers that would appeal to Fire Creek. So I said, hey, I'll give you $500. I have no idea what's going to happen, but if you'll just send an email to your, or two emails, but just an honest review because he loved the product, send it to your list. And he got like over 1,500 in sales for us. And so there's tons of those opportunities out there where try to think less about someone who sells the exact same thing as you, but think of people who have your same audience and they could benefit, you know, they benefit by making money. It's a benefit to their customer. Like there's nothing to say, this is a great product. If you want to buy it, I gave him a 25% off discount code. So he's helping his audience. He's making money directly and it helps us because now we've built our email list and we've got some more sales. That was a good one. We did the middle of last year, we did a big giveaway where we kind of took one of our full displays that we would put in a retail store and we said, we're going to give this away. It's like a $500 value. Started with our email list and it got very viral very quickly. We used a tool called King Sumo, which is made by, you know, AppSumo and Noah Kagan. That was awesome. So we added several thousand subscribers to our email list. We had some sales. The kind of downside of it is it got posted on a lot of freebie type of sites. And so we got a lot of freebie type of people that, you know, after a couple of months, we just kind of had to kick them off our email list because they were very inactive. But overall, it was definitely a huge bump in our email list growth.
Okay. So the way the software works is like to get extra entries, you need to share it on social media, you need to forward to a friend. Like I kind of forget how it works.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, you get, just for signing up with your email, you get one entry and then it immediately says, share it on Facebook, post it on Pinterest, email it to a friend. And just by taking certain actions, you get bonus entries. So most people get started and they're just like, I'm just going to do all of them because it's not that hard. And it really does create, you know, a pretty viral effect pretty quickly. You know, these are all things that we kind of did one off and then didn't do a lot of good follow-up. We're doing a lot better here in 2020. I mentioned like owning St. Louis and we did some things like paid for radio advertising and like a terrestrial radio in St. Louis, which sounds kind of crazy for an e-commerce brand, but it was a local radio personality like the Evening Drive guy who's one of the top rated shows and we gave him a discount code and he's had great stories around the product and that was very successful for us as well. And it was especially successful once we were in most of the Walmarts because now we can say buy it online and save 15% with this code. Or if you're not that type of shopper, it's also in Walmart. And we saw definite improvements in our Walmart sales with the radio ads.
Yeah, you almost have to do direct response if you don't have that brick and mortar presence. Otherwise, you have no idea if it's working.
You have to. Yeah, I think the coupon code is the key. And we know, you can just tell because it was at like 4:30. I know he was reading it. We'd get like 10 sales and maybe only 6 or 7 of them would actually use the code because some people just don't remember to use the code, but there's some pretty tight correlations to the reading time and when the sales happen. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. I think of any type of broadcast ads like that as being almost prohibitively expensive for small business, but did you find that it was profitable?
It's not bad. I say that and we're currently paused on it. We did a lot of it up through the holidays. And we really returned our attention back online. We had some cash flow issues because of a lot of the trade show expenses and things last year. So we're like, you know, we're going to take a break. So we kind of do it on a quarterly basis. So we haven't done it for a quarter, but we're going to go back to it. It was actually, that's the nuance of this. Like, was it profitable or not? Like, if you just looked at the coupon codes redeemed and the sales, not quite. But we know there was tons of brand recognition built. We know that there were people who bought that we didn't track directly with a coupon code. We know that, like, for instance, we would go into a Walmart and the store manager would say, yeah, I heard about you on the Glover show. So, you know, had an open door. We went to trade shows in like Kansas City, which is 5 hours away. And someone, we had numerous people come to our booth. I listened to the Dave Glover podcast and I heard about you guys. So there's something to be said for that kind of old school broadcast appeal. It's just a little harder to measure.
For sure. Anything else on the marketing side or the e-commerce side?
I'd say the last kind of channel that surprisingly good for people to check out is Groupon. So they actually reached out to us. Someone, again, stumbled on the product and liked it and said this might be a good fit. So we've been going for about 8 months with Groupon, where people get a really nice sampler pack. They pay a reduced price. Groupon keeps a cut. They give us a cut. We are still making a little money on every transaction, which is awesome. And we're acquiring lots of new customers. So we get new customers every day through Groupon. And then Groupon has their own feedback channel. So if you go to like the listing page for our offer, it's got all the reviews. And I just checked today, we've got like 40-something, all 5-star reviews, tons of good testimonials in there that we can use. So for us, Groupon's been a home run and cost us nothing.
Interesting.
Yeah. All you have to do is create a good deal.
Do they run it now where it's like an evergreen offer?
They do, yeah. And I don't know for sure how long. I don't know if we had like a 1-year agreement and hopefully they'll renew. At first, it was slow. It was slower than I thought. Like the impression we got was you're going to get a deluge of traffic, and we had a trickle, but then it comes in spurts. And it's like, I think we get like 25 orders, and it's like, we must have just been in an email blast for Groupon. And, you know, it's pretty interesting. They show you by region, and they're very targeted in different regions of the country for our sales. So I think it's just they have their algorithms, and they know who they think should sell the best. And yeah, we've been happy with Groupon, and they redeem it through our Shopify store. So what's nice about that is they're still in our ecosystem. We get their email address. We can ask them for reviews on our site, all that good stuff too.
Yeah, you're breaking even, or like you said, making a little bit of money and acquiring a new customer that hopefully buys something down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of the last thing I would say on the e-commerce side, I'd never used Shopify. So I created WordPress sites in the past. And so if you go to our Shopify store, what might strike you is it's like super simplistic. It's very clean. We only have like 9 SKUs. There's not a lot there, but I think that really helps with our store. I was looking up because Shopify will send you things that says like, here's your rank among similar stores and all that. So we have our Shopify store converts at 12%. And what they told us is that 4% is the average for food category.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say 12% is really high for e-commerce.
Yeah. And they say our traffic's in the top 7% in our category, and our cart abandonment emails convert 20% of people back versus 7%. And I think part of that's the simplicity. But the other thing, we are like extreme in how we guarantee the product because we can't get someone to taste it. So it's, you know, we don't have that wholesale experience. So it's like, how can I convince you to just try it? So our guarantee is we're the best snack in the world. And if you just try it, if you don't agree that not only that it's good, but like that it's not the best snack like this you've ever had, then we'll give you all your money back and you can keep the product. And I can tell you in all sincerity, we've had over 3,000 orders through Shopify and we've had exactly 0 refunds. So the product helps a lot, but we're just bold about it. Yeah. And we've got subscriptions. So the subscription function of Shopify makes it easy to get repeat business as well.
Yeah. I see you've got the subscribe and save option, just like Amazon here.
Yep. 10% off, and we'll run coupon codes, and we always let it compound with that so people can lock in a really good rate on a monthly or every 2 or 3 month subscription. So we've got a lot of loyal customers through there.
What's next? What's 2020 have in store for Fire Creek Snacks?
Yeah, so the thing I'm most excited about right now is we are on the online side. I'm pushing the edge to try to get to this just try it thing. And so I think the guarantee is good. What I really want to do is get the product into people's hands for free and then obviously make them a convert to the Fire Creek family, as we call it, and have them become a lifetime customer. So we're just launching kind of a new offer, a new funnel. It's basically a free plus shipping funnel, if people are familiar, where people can get all the flavors, multiple of them, so they can share them with their family. And it's free. All they have to do is pay a small shipping charge. And we're gonna lose money on every one of those for sure on the front end, except people will upsell and buy more and hopefully kind of even things out. But we're being bold with that. So if anyone's listening and they're like, hey, this, you know, I want to try these, and trying them for free is the best. It's real simple. We're just doing that at firecreeksnacks.com/free. And you'll just see real simple, enter your shipping info. And worst case scenario, you hate them and you didn't pay anything for them.
It's like super common in the book world, right?
In the supplement world, the book world. That's kind of where I was looking. I'm like, there's no reason. Our cost of goods sold is probably a little higher, so there's a little more risk to us. But our customer lifetime value is astronomical because we get such good recurring revenue. I'm like, this is really worth trying. So it'll be there hopefully when everyone's listening to this episode. If not, then it was a complete failure and don't ever try it. But I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah, I like it. That's innovative stuff here. You're, like you said, bringing the digital marketing experience to kind of a brick and mortar business and testing stuff out. And I think this is one that can be applied across any number of niches, hopefully any number of geographies and different products. So really appreciate you sharing the stuff. That URL, again, if you want to get some snacks sent to you, is firecreeksnacks.com/free. Go test it out. Hopefully this free plus shipping funnel was a hit and that is still in operation. Dustin, let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Absolutely. Yeah, my number one tip, and you've heard it as a theme, I think, throughout my story, is always be looking for an opportunity to give someone else a win. I've really found throughout my life that if you serve first, you always have awesome opportunities coming back your way. That's how Fire Creek started for me, you know, walking in and saying, how can I help you, Ryan, sell more of this online, do it at no risk, and lead with a win for the other person. And then great things tend to happen after that.
It is so true. I love it. Serve first and give someone else a win. Dustin, thank you so much, and we'll catch up with you soon. I think Dustin's story illustrates the empowerment that comes with learning a new skill, and in his case, the digital marketing skill spent from a decade of blogging. And that learning is something that we can all practice, no matter where we're starting from. To that end, I want to invite you to join the millions of side hustlers, professionals, and entrepreneurs that are building, fueling, and expanding their creative fire with our sponsor, Skillshare. With thousands of classes in marketing, productivity, entrepreneurship, social media, and tons more, this is the online learning community for creators like us. Pretty much whatever you need to learn next, they've got it. And it's all online, on demand, so you can learn at your own pace and on your own terms. These are high-quality courses taught by practicing experts, guys like Simon Sinek, Guy Kawasaki, Gary Vaynerchuk, and more. I want to invite you to try Skillshare free for 2 months, kind of like an extended test drive. See if it's right for you. Side Hustle Show listeners can claim that offer over at skillshare.com/sidehustleshow. That's skillshare.com/sidehustleshow for 2 months of free unlimited access to the entire catalog. Let's skip the Netflix tonight and go do some learning. Once again, skillshare.com/sidehustleshow. All right, my top three takeaways from this call with Dustin. Number one, start with what you know and what you like already. In Dustin's case, he knew the product was high quality. He knew that he liked it, and he already had a relationship with Ryan, with the decision maker. I think if you're going to try and apply this side hustle in your own hometown, it makes sense to start in a similar spot. For example, before lockdown anyways, I would try and go to work from one of our local coffee shops once a week, and they've got some unique products like Kava, for example, which I've never actually tried, but if I did, and if I thought it was awesome, it wouldn't be a stretch to start that conversation about expanding distribution in exchange for a percentage of sales. Make it a zero-risk proposition, like Dustin said. And like any sales conversation, if you can get a warm introduction, you're going to be better off. And I imagine business owners are more open today than perhaps ever to these experiments on incremental revenue streams. That's takeaway number one for me. Start with what you know and what you like already, maybe where you have some pre-existing relationships. Takeaway number two is to get creative. I think my favorite part of this call with Dustin was when he was just rattling off all these different marketing tactics. The sponsored email campaigns, he mentioned the guy with the barbecue site, the fundraisers with local schools, the King Sumo giveaway, the Groupon campaign. That stuff was gold. And I think it's stuff that can be tested with or experimented with on lots of different products. So if you end up playing around with any of those ideas, definitely let me know. That's takeaway number two, get creative with it. Takeaway number three is to get people to try it. This is the biggest hurdle, not just for physical product businesses. This is like the biggest hurdle for any business. That's why you see free samples at stores, or you used to at least. That's why you see these free plus shipping offers. That's why I've got my side hustle book free on Kindle. It's all about how can you reduce the friction to get somebody into your world with the hope that once they give it a shot, they'll stick around. And if you're lucky, they'll tell their friends. That's why headlines are so important on blog posts, YouTube videos, podcast titles, email subject lines. It's the first thing that people see. And like Dustin said, that's the free sample. If I can just get somebody to taste it, I know they'll like it, right? So my question is, how could you apply the free sample strategy in your business? How could you make it so compelling it's hard to say no? Get people to try it. Notes and links for this one, along with the full text summary with all of Dustin's top tips from the call, are at sidehustlenation.com/firecreek. And that is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.